The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I am on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. Sit back and enjoy the military transition hot washes and after action reports of your fellow veterans. You may just learn some lessons that smooth your own transition path. So for all of you loyal Lessons Learned for Vets podcast listeners, I have an exciting announcement and a favor to ask of you. We are launching a YouTube channel for the podcast. I started this show really as a passion project based on my heart to serve and educate veterans, but it's not a cost-free endeavor. And so I'm looking for ways to fund the show. And one of those ways is to launch a YouTube channel. So for each episode, I am going to record a bonus question with my guests that you can hear over on the YouTube channel. And each month we'll do a highlight video of the best snippets of all of the episodes for each month. Would you consider going to YouTube and subscribing to our channel, watching a few videos, and throwing a few likes our way? It would be much appreciated. And thank you so much for being a loyal listener of the show.
So on my avenue, it's teaching every person in my office, because I work in an administration office. I work with an NC1 who is a phenomenal individual, incredibly knowledgeable, but he had very little information when it came to SkillBridge, post-separation job search, LinkedIn, anything like that. It's just because it's not in our curriculum. So I think that for us, it is, I know a bunch of people are going to balk at this, but add it to the a GMT session, like that quarterly GMT. Hey, everybody's required to go to this. So why don't we have a 15-minute skill bridge? Why don't we have a 5-minute, 10-minute LinkedIn? Why don't we have all of these opportunities at those GMTs that we're required to do? And you can do those service-wide. Like, it doesn't have to be any one branch. So I agree with you that it starts at the top. But at the same time, it's what you said previously, and it starts with everyone.
Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. We are welcoming Tyler Burkholder today for another one of our military transition Q&A sessions. So Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on, Lori.
I know you have listened to all of the episodes, so you know how this goes. You've sent me some really nice messages. I'm so happy that the show has been of value to you. So I'm going to turn it over to you to introduce yourself to me.
My name is Tyler Burkholder. I'm originally from Boise, Idaho. I graduated with my bachelor's in anthropology from Boise State in 2012. I applied to be an officer in the Navy, and the sequester of 2013 kind of tanked that option. So I enlisted instead, went the nuclear engineering route, and became an engineering laboratory technician. For anybody else that doesn't understand what that means, it's a nuclear chemist. I participated in fleet activities on fast attack submarines. I was home ported in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii for 18 months, and then transited up to Bremerton, Washington, and decommissioned the USS Bremerton and the USS Jacksonville at Puget Puget Sound Naval Shipyard. I have an MBA in healthcare leadership from Boise State as well. Graduated almost 8 days or 8 years exactly. And then I have a wife, two kids, a lab mix. My kids are 1 and 3, and I'm very excited to be rejoining them once I start my SkillBridge program.
That's exciting. You told me that you're almost finished, right? Your last day in uniform is, I think, Friday, if I remember correctly.
Hopefully
so
Friday.
Which will be, you know, you'll have already completed it by the time we release this. But tell us what's next for you. You said you have a SkillBridge opportunity.
Yes. So what's next for me is a 6 month. So my command actually signed off on the full 180 days to partner with United Health Group. I'll be working with Optum, so their care network, in the central business initiatives as a project manager. I'm very, very excited for this opportunity.
Give me a quick overview of how you landed the role. Like, what did you go through to that's a great, exciting opportunity, especially with your master's degree. So how'd that come about?
Serendipity is really the only way to say it. I first met Barbara Beltram and Eddie Dunn at a 50 Strong event about a year and a half ago now. And I reached out to Eddie and went through the process with him, and he referred me to Barb. And I continued to talk to Barb, connected with Barb on LinkedIn, and continued participating in 50 Strong events. I learned very early in my naval career not to put all my eggs in one basket. So I applied to about 7 different SkillBridge programs and was just kind of striking out on some of them, not hearing back from other people, couldn't find a role that fit my timeline. And then when I was on convalescent leave for my jaw surgery that I had in March, I received an email from Barb, and she asked if I would be willing to interview for a position with United Health Group. I said, absolutely. We set up a time. I interviewed with her on a Thursday. I think we were off the phone at about 2 in the afternoon. And then by 4 o'clock, she emailed me back saying, there's a team that's interested in you and they want to set up a time to interview. We were able to make it work where I was still on convalescent leave. I interviewed the following Tuesday. My interview was supposed to be about 30 minutes long. We got about 20 minutes into it, and both of my panel members looked at each other like, okay, we can push our next meetings. So let's continue this conversation. And that's what it was. It just turned into a conversation. There was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of really good dialogue and discussion. I think what really sealed the deal for me was the level of questioning that I had at the end. If you pay attention to your podcast, it talks about at the end of an interview, ask questions. Well, right. I had about 6 that I walked in with. And during our discussion, I developed about another 10. And I selected the top 5. And asked those questions. The responses that I got back were incredible. And it absolutely seemed like it was a wonderful fit. I mean, that was just kind of, the timing was absolutely perfect. And that's why I started with serendipity, because I had nothing really set in stone. And then in a matter of 5 days, I had everything set up and ready to go. So I start that on May 17th. And that's the full 180 days.
That's exciting. And that's kind of the way the job search works. It's like almost like a feast or famine, right? It's like, you know, it's like a snowball rolling downhill. As once your efforts start to really pay off, then those opportunities really just kind of come out of nowhere. And it feels like all hope is lost. And then you see that glimmer of light ahead. And so if you're in that process right now and you're thinking it's hopeless and nothing's going to happen, you've got to just keep pushing forward. And like you said, just keep trying new things. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, and all of that effort will pay off. And I know you've been planning for this process for a very long time, and it's all of those efforts, all of that planning comes together, and it really will happen. It's something that, you know, you just have to keep pushing forward. You have to keep your head up and move forward, and all of a sudden things are going to come out of the woodwork. So it sounds like that was the great thing for you today. So congratulations on your exciting role. And
thank
I can't
you
wait
very
to
much.
Hear how you like it. Yeah, very cool. Well, I understand you came with some questions for me.
Absolutely. So we'll start off with a relatively easy question. How can we as vets do a better job lifting up those behind us.
I know you've heard me say this, but this is exactly the reason why I started this show, right? So, I've been working with veterans since 2005, and they would tell me stories. They would say, this happened, and here's what I learned, and I wish I'd known this. And I kept saying, like, you have to share this with other people. And so I decided to create a platform where people could do that with ease. And so if you're listening and you're learning your own lessons, come back and share it here on the show. And I'd love to have you come back and tell us kind of what your first few months on the SkillBridge program are like. And when you land that role, not if, when you land that role, I'd love to hear more about how that process goes for you. So I think that as a veteran, it's important to spread the word of all the resources that are available, right? When you find a resource, when you find a program, when you hear a great new podcast, as an example, share it. Like, that's, the only way that I've grown to the point that I am now. I'm not advertising, other than I write a post a week on LinkedIn, but it's the people that write a post about the podcast, that share how important it's been to them, that comment or suggest it to others. So it's the same thing with any resource, is like, don't hoard your resources, right? Like, share them with other people. And I think that, we've got to start getting to service members earlier in their career. Even if they're planning to go to retirement, things might happen, like injuries, family situations. If we think about Casey Valenti and Benji Manabog, two of season two's people that I interviewed, both of them had unexpected occurrences that, although they planned on making the military a 20 plus year career, their careers were cut short. One was both were due to family situations. So you just never know. Injuries could come up. You want to always be ready. And even if you plan to make it a career, just start thinking about this earlier in the process. Like, if I had my way, I would get to be able to be in the ear of service members within their first 4 years, so I could start talking to them about how to plan for the long term. Like, if you throw it way, way back on the podcast to Greg Austin, who I think he was back in the single digits, maybe like episode 8 or maybe 11, I can't remember, but he's been planning for his transition for 14 years, I think, is what he told us in the show. So I think that seems like an anomaly, but it really should be the norm. The more you can tell people about how important that planning process is, the better. But the thing that I want you to do is be honest, right? Like, have you ever noticed when you make it through a hard thing, you're not like, oh my God, that was the hardest thing I've ever done. You're like, it wasn't so bad. Right? And so transition's hard. Like, there are days that are going to suck. Like you told me earlier, you're going to get punched in the face.
Oh, absolutely. And so,
yeah. It's all fun and games till we get punched in the face, right? And so I think the more you prepare for that and the way you know it's coming, the better you're going to be able to get yourself up off the canvas and start swinging again. And so, like, be open and raw and honest about how the transition made you feel, so that the people that follow behind you don't feel alone. And what I've found from this podcast is I thought that it was going to provide education, and I thought it was going to provide information and be a guide. And I think it has done that. But I think what is more important about what this podcast has turned into is the people that listen are like, oh, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that feels that way. And I think the more we can be open and honest about the experience and the good and the bad of it, the better we'll be able to lift people up behind us, right? And so, get involved, give back, like Veterati, ACP, Vets to Industry, attending events like 50 Strong as a resource and a guide, as opposed to as someone who's there because they need something. A lot of times people land a job and they go dark on LinkedIn. Like, oh, my transition's over. I don't need my network anymore. They're like, throw the deuces and they're out, right? So you want to stay engaged, and so that you can lift that hand back to help the person that follows you. So those are just some ideas that I have. What do you plan to do to lift up those behind you?
I've actually started a LinkedIn lineage post. So every Thursday, I've started calling it New Talk Thursdays, because the more I'm interacting with the civilian world and corporate America, I'm realizing that the 2 years of training that we're required to go through before ever seeing the fleet, 6 month nuclear power school, that's a 2.5 year nuclear engineering technology program written by some of the top universities in the country. Like, we get that 2.5 years in 6 months. There's a point in time where we're taking 5 exams in the same week. And so we have this academic background that no one else has. When we go to the fleet, we do so many different things to just kind of help my brethren as I'm transitioning. I've been doing this Nuke Talk Thursday, and it's getting more spread out to other people. And I'm seeing new people connecting with it every week. And so my intent is to keep that going. Once I get through my initial 6 week plan, I'll probably start targeting specific jobs. And the thing is it's a resource for nuclear operators and civilians. And a conversation with a civilian recruiter is what started the whole thing, because he just wanted to know about nuclear engineering rates. And so he and I talked for an hour, hour and a half, and that's what prompted this whole thing. But I have every intention of going to 50 Strong as like a recent success story. I anticipate in participating in Vets to Industry, all of the things that you've said. I would love to come back on and talk about how my transition goes, because the first 2 years of my transition were terrible. It was a lot of getting punched in the face, a lot of doors getting slammed in my face, a lot of issues both in and outside of the Navy. It would be awesome to be able to come from that and be like, see, look at what you can do if you put your mind to it, and listen to people like Lori and Alfredo Torres, and Misty Moreno has phenomenal content online. And I mean, networking is key. I think that's where I'm going to spend my time, because in the last 3 weeks since I started Nuke Talk Thursdays, I've already had probably 45 or 50 people connect with me. Over half of them have asked questions as simple as, how do I say this in civilian? Because they see the post and they see how I can relate it, because I've read probably 2,000 job posts. Because when you start looking at titles, you see one title is in one company and then the same job, like almost line for line bullets, has an entirely different title and they're in adjacent industry. So to try to figure out what I wanted to do, I read a ton of job posts and I realized that there's so many things that we as nuclear operators and then submariners as a whole, just based on how much stuff we're required to do to survive. That's my plan moving forward, is the Nuke Talk Thursdays and then participating in the events that help me.
And just spreading the word. I think that's the biggest thing. And like you said, being honest about the difficulties. I think we all want to look like the hero of our story. And while we are, like, the hero has to have a journey. So don't be afraid to share that journey and be open and raw and real about that. So I think that's great.
It was definitely more of a damsel in distress the first 2 years. There were a lot of people I reached out to.
Well, I'm glad to see your success so far and can't wait to hear more about it in the future. I have no doubt that you're going to do great.
I appreciate that. My second question is, with TAP only being 5 days, what do you think is the best way to get the information to our transitioning vets, since not every person sees value in social media?
Yeah, you know, I actually just this morning spoke with a Navy sailor who I asked about LinkedIn, and that sailor is in the recruiting command. And they said, oh, I don't think LinkedIn's really all that important. I was like, no, it is as important as your resume. I'm going to just say that right now. Your LinkedIn profile is as important as your resume. And what you do with your LinkedIn profile is as important as your job interview answers. So it absolutely is important. So how do we get people to know more about social media? And I think that veterans are kind of commonly like anti-social media, obviously for good reason, right? But LinkedIn is different, right? LinkedIn is a professional online presence. You're not going to post pictures of your breakfast and your kids and, you know, so on and so forth. And so I think the more we can get service members, like I said, I want to get in that process earlier. And I know, like, you know, people like Michael Quinn are doing a lot to teach senior leaders about LinkedIn and so that they can spread the word also. But I believe it starts at the top, right? It starts with command. And it starts with our leaders realizing that, hey, I'm still in the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, the Coast Guard. I don't know anything about transition. Maybe so that I can help my people, I need to expand my knowledge. I need to open up my aperture to take care of my people. And I really wish that we could get every military leader in the mindset of, like, these are my people forever. And I know that's not the way it'll be, right? Because you're constantly rotating through people. But I feel like if you really truly are, you know, what you call yourself, a servant leader, then you want to serve them today and tomorrow and into the future. And part of that is setting them up for success for the rest of their career, not just while they're under your command in the Navy or, what you know, in the military. So I think it starts at the top. So you're a command career counselor currently, right?
Yes.
What do you think we can do to help get the word out?
So on my avenue, it's teaching every person in my office, because I work in an administration office. I work with an NC1 who is a phenomenal individual, incredibly knowledgeable, but he had very little information when it came to SkillBridge, post-separation job search, LinkedIn, anything like that. It's just because it's not in our curriculum. So I think that for us, it is, I know a bunch of people are going to balk at this, but add it to a GMT session, like that quarterly GMT. Hey, everybody's required to go to this. So why don't we have a 15-minute SkillBridge? Why don't we have a 5-minute, 10-minute LinkedIn? Why don't we have all of these opportunities at those GMTs that we're required to do? And you can do those service-wide. Like, it doesn't have to be any one branch. So I agree with you that it starts at the top. But at the same time, it's what you said previously, that it starts with everyone. Everyone coming up the ranks should know what their opportunities are, so they can do those certifications, so they can do those courses, they can get the degrees, they can do whatever they need to do to improve their career, because it also helps their promotability. It's easier to make the next pay grade if you have a degree. It makes it more marketable when you go for a promotion board. If you have your PMP or your Lean Six Sigma or your PHR, like whatever it be, you kind of have to close it in from both sides. Like, we need more of the top down. Absolutely agree. But at the same time, I almost feel like it should be part of basic training to understand that everybody gets out. As Herb Thompson says, God willing, everybody transitions out of the military. So I think that that's where it's going to come from, is just better overall training. And TAP is good for what it is, but it's not enough. I went through a 2-year pipeline. That's what taught me my job. I've been transitioning, like knowing that I was going to transition, for almost 3 years now. Only in the last 3 weeks did something work out in my favor. So it's taken me almost the same amount of time that I went through school to know my job as it is to have any idea what I wanted to do when it came to getting out of the military. So for those people who don't have time, they're at a severe disadvantage. And those are the individuals that I work with on a daily basis, is the kids who are getting out after 2 years in the Navy and they've got 2 months to get out. How do you help people like that? I just give as much information as I possibly can.
I'm going to bet money that your out-processing education wasn't nearly as high a quality as your in-processing education.
Not even remotely.
And that's the thing, is like, we spend all this time, effort, and money on turning you into your specialty in the Navy. why don't we spend that same level of time and effort in helping you be successful after the military? Like, that's the ultimate thank you for your service, is thank you for your service. Now let me help you be successful in the next phase of your career.
Absolutely.
I just don't understand.
And I mean, Tyrone Hewitt does a great job covering, like, hey, file your disability claim. This is how you do it. He puts out phenomenal content. I think I've been on his page, like his LinkedIn profile, almost daily for the last 4 or 5 weeks, just showing people, like, hey, this is the process. I don't know what I'm talking about, but he does. So go follow him. Go reach out to him. There's not enough of those resources to share with everybody. Yes, there are, what, 45,000 veteran service organizations. But if you're dealing with a short-term processing, I guarantee you they're not thinking about that.
No, it's true. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to keep pressing forward and being a voice out there, no matter how small that voice is, to support whoever I can. And what I always say at the end of every episode is, if I've helped just one person make their transition easier, then I've done my job. And I believe that. And that's my mission, right? Is that one person, if I make an impact. But yeah, would I love to have this podcast be in the ear of every active duty service member? Absolutely, because I know it can help them. I know it can open their eyes to their possibilities. I know it can open their eyes to the potential roadblocks. I know it can help them better plan. Until that happens, then we'll just keep pushing forward.
And I know for myself, I've gotten 1 to 2 things that have impacted my life directly from every podcast episode. It's definitely worthwhile. And I tell people to come listen. It doesn't matter if you're in for a year, you're getting ready, like you're filing a retirement paperwork. I've referred people to the podcast just because it's helped me.
I appreciate that. Thank you for the referrals. And like I said, it's grassroots that's grown us to this point. We have some things in the works that will help us grow further, faster. But I mean, I think that, you know, I do this as a hobby. You know, I do this to give back to this community. And so I think that the more I can have kind of my own army of promoters out there, and anyone that's listening, if you're willing to be that promoter, I would greatly appreciate it, because that's how the word really gets out.
My next question, you often use the term focus for those who have no focus or ideas what they want to do next, or, as I previously stated, are being involuntarily separated. What are some options that people could do to help them find that focus again?
So do you think maybe we should start a drinking game that every time I say the word focus or relevant, that everyone should take a shot? Or would we just have a bunch of drunk listeners out there?
We wouldn't make it to the end of the podcast.
I know this is a drum I beat a lot. I get that. And I always, anytime I teach a class, I'm like, okay, you're going to hear me say these words a lot, because I still today, I'll have people come to me and they're like, hey, I've listened to all your podcasts. Can you look at my resume? And I'm like, okay, but do you have a focus? Well, no, but we need to start with the focus first, right? I know I say that a lot, and I actually have plans to bring a career coach on the show to really walk people through this process in depth. But let me give you some resources to start out. So first of all, books. I recommend a couple of books that I think are great. One of them is Do What You Are. And that book is based on the Myers-Briggs principles of helping you figure out the right work environment, the right work setting, the right work tasks and activities that work best with your personality, right? Another one is Now Discover Your Strengths, that helps you kind of assess your own value and then how can you use those going forward. I like 16personalities.com as a website that helps you. Again, it's a Myers-Briggs based. I'm a big believer in that. I've found it to be incredibly accurate. So those are just some resources where you can start out. But I'll tell you right now, like, and you know, you've heard me say this again, but your focus is not forever. Sometimes you might need to just try something to take. You just might need to take a step forward, so that, because we're sitting in indecision, like, I don't know what to do. So pick something, go forward, research it, see if it works. You can always change down the road. This is kind of my, something I teach when I teach this class in person. I teach lessons learned for military transition live at Luke Air Force Base every other month. And I teach this concept. So I want you to picture in your head four concentric circles. And I know this is a hard thing to visualize, so I will link to this graphic in the show notes. The first circle is your values and preferences, right? So this circle focuses on, what do you love to do? Do you want to work inside? Do you want to work outside? Do you want to work with people or machines? Do you want to work with data? Do you want to be out having conversations? Do you want to work with a small company or a large company? Do you want to travel? Do you not want to travel? Like, what are your preferences and what values are most important to you? So those are some things you need to think about, right? That's your first circle. The next circle is your marketability, right? So your marketability is all about, does the world need what you have to offer, right? Is there a market for what you do? There might be a market for what you do, but it might be a very small market, right? And it might be a market that's very concentrated in a place where you don't want to live. I have a kid that's going through this right now. What she wants to do, she would have to live in New York or California. She doesn't want to live either of those places. So that makes it a little bit challenging. So she's kind of going through this on her own, right? So your marketability, right? The third circle is your salary needs. Yes, money makes the world go round. We all need money to pay our bills, to live, to keep a roof over our head and food in our kids' bellies. So can you get paid to do what you love? Okay, so that's the question. Is there a market and does that salary meet the needs that you have? I want to be a kindergarten teacher and I need to make $95,000 a year. Probably not going to work, right? So unfortunately, they should get paid $95,000 plus a year, but they don't. So we need to do that research. And then the fourth circle are your transferable skills. Like, are you good at it? Do you have the required transferable skills in those industries? All right. So imagine those all four laid out, right? At the center of those circles is your career focus. However, if you have four concentric circles, each of them overlap with each other, right? So I want to take this to the next step. So there's an overlap between values and preferences and marketability. Where that overlaps is your company research. It's like, where do you see your values, your preferences align with the right place in the industry where you want to work? So we want to start to identify our best companies and target in that way. As I talked about my kids just love that I talk about them on my podcast. That's why they don't listen. So they don't hear all the things I say. But you know, she knows that her market is very focused in two geographic areas, neither of which she wants to live in. So now she's got to start looking at other ways she can contribute to that industry. The next overlap is between marketability and salary needs. And this is where you conduct your career and industry research. Does your target role pay what you need to live, right? Is it located where you want to live? So that's that overlap between salary and transferable skills. That is where we start to learn how to market ourselves. How do we talk about our skills as a nuke in terms of healthcare project management, right? So obviously you figured that out and you did that well, but this is where we start to learn, like, we translate our military skills. We showcase the value those skills can add to an organization, and we learn to speak about what we did in the military differently. And then lastly is that overlap between transferable skills and our values and preferences. And that is where you ensure you love what you do, right? And yes, I know that we are not all going to work in a place where we skip into work every day and rainbows and sunshine emanate from our each ear, but you deserve to like what you do. If you don't like what you do, keep looking. You can still keep making money at a place where you don't like what you're doing until you figure out where you want to go, but you deserve to enjoy it. There deserves to be a part of you that is fulfilled and happy with what you do. And that's where that overlap is, right? And so, again, I know I painted a very detailed picture. Hopefully you kind of followed along, but I will put that graphic in the show notes so you can see what the heck I was talking about. But these are just all things that you need to think about. So I recommend that you just sit down and write it out, right? And so we'll talk more about kind of those skills later, but sit down and write out, like, what do you like to do? Like, what are you good at, first of all? Okay. And then we'll get into this more. And I have some more about this I want to talk about, one of your later questions you want to ask. But it's a process, but you have to be willing to take the time to do it. And I'm guessing you didn't do it when you were in high school. I'm guessing the recruiter that brought you into the Navy didn't say, "All right, Tyler, let's sit down and talk about what's going to make you happy."
Definitely not. Right?
They said, "You're going here." It's a very foreign concept to think about, like, oh, what do I want? I don't know. I have to put myself second. I am behind the needs of my country. And so it's unique, and it's definitely something that you need to sit down and think about. Figure out, who are you apart from the military, right? So the episode's coming out tomorrow with Michael Klemmer. Something we talk about, right, is what, like, I know who I am in the military, like, but what do I like? I don't even know what I want to do with my time. A couple weeks ago, Samira and I talked about, we don't have hobbies. We're in the military, right? It's time that you get to have a full life. I appreciate the sacrifice that you've made, whether it was 2 years or 32 years. And now it's your turn to enjoy your life. So take the time to do it, because it's important.
Yeah, I know that hobbies have kind of helped me out. During COVID, I picked up a new hobby. I make knives, because it's out after the intellectual aspects of my everyday job. I needed something to do with my hands. It is a lot more mind intense than I anticipated, because I'm a perfectionist. And so I want to know everything about every step that I'm doing when I get the time to just go out into the shop and sit there and make something that I consider beautiful. I mean, just consider it a sharp, pointy thing. Don't think of it as a weapon, whatever you want to do. Yeah. It's very comforting to move through all of those steps, starting with just plain steel and some chunks of handle material that don't look anything like what the finished product is going to be. A lot of that is how I figured out my focus, because it's so many hours doing something that is not my normal, that I was able to step back and kind of give that 10,000 foot view of what I wanted my life to be. And ironically, I found that while I was sitting at a belt grinder, not having a conversation at work.
No, I think that's really being introspective, right? Whether that means go, like, climb a mountain, you know, find a hobby that where you can just focus on the task at hand, whether it's just sitting down with a pad of paper, only you know how you can kind of dig to the bottom of it. And this is not a question that anyone can answer for you. This is a question you have to answer for yourself, not your spouse, not your family. Like, you need to do this for you. Period.
Yeah. And those people can be helpful, but again, it's our decision. Each individual has to, again, own their transition.
I don't know if we've quoted anyone more than Herb Thompson in this show.
That's because, first, he had 2 episodes and he's got so many oolies that you have to listen to it at least twice and get his book.
Yeah.
But at least listen to his podcast episodes twice.
They were good episodes. Yeah. I mean, I didn't plan to do 2 episodes with him, but I just kept asking him questions and I'm like, okay, we're going to have to split this one in two.
Coming from a place of experience and from people close to me, what are some of the ways that people can regain or relearn their worth after being told that they don't mean anything? Like, how can we know our worth when our worth is just a number?
First and foremost, like,
Anybody that has ever told you that you don't have worth or value is full of shit, period, right? Anyone that's ever said that to you was simply didn't know how to help you. They put you down to make themselves feel better. Like, everybody out there listening was put on this earth for a purpose. You just haven't found it yet, possibly. There are people that care about you, that see your value, that see that worth. Like, you make the world a better place, period. Full stop. Don't need to say anything else about that, but I'm gonna. So I do want you to know that, like, really, truly, like, we are meaner to ourselves in our head than anyone else could ever be. And if someone told you some BS that you're not worth something, why would you repeat that lie to yourself? Tell yourself the truth of what you're worth. And I feel like that what we talked about in the last one with, you know, the concentric circles and really starting to think about, like, who you are, I feel like that can help you learn that value, that worth. But I really want you to think about doing an assessment of your skills, right? So we all have skills. And I want you to just sit down, like, sit down with a piece of paper. And I want you to just start writing everything you know how to do. And I don't care if it's one of those skills is typing or, you know, creating a Word document, something so basic. Write it down. And I want you to just think about, like, what did you do for the last day? Okay, how about the last week? How about the last month? How about the last year? And start thinking about, like, just brain dump all of those skills on a big pad of paper. Type it in a Word doc, whatever you need to do. And then I want you to go, once you get it all out and you can't think of anything else, I want you to go through and I want you to cross through the skills you never want to use again. There are some skills that I have that I don't want to do. Put a line through the ones you don't want to do, right? So leave behind the stuff that you're good at and you enjoy. And then I want you to write a story or an example next to each of those skills that you left that aren't crossed out. Write a story that showcases a situation where you use that skill to be of benefit to a teammate, an organization, where it added value to your military team, where it made a difference for you or someone else. So start writing out those stories. And I hear this from people all the time. I don't have any accomplishments. I just, like, fill in the blanks, right? So I want you to get rid of the word just from your vocabulary. You didn't just anything. And tell me what you did, right? Without that justifier word of, well, I just, or, you know, you've got to throw that out. And so that's, like, I think one of the ways where you can really sit down and start to say, like, oh, I do have a lot of skills. I used to teach this process to through the Maricopa Workforce Connections here in Arizona. And I had a guy once that sat down and did this list, and he told me he was going to go home and sleep with it under his pillow because he had no idea all of the things he was good at. And it just made him feel so much more confident in himself. And I promise you that it will make you feel the same way. And you can't go into it with, like, this is going to suck. This is going to take forever. This is stupid. I go into it saying, okay, I need to help an employer understand who I am and what I can do for them. And really just put it all down and keep going until you can't think of anything else. Do you think that could be helpful?
Oh, I absolutely think that can be helpful. The removing just from my vocabulary has had a very direct impact. And I mean, that's one of the things that I tell every single one of the sailors that comes to my office, is when you're describing yourself, when you're talking to others, there is no just. I mean, if you just walked through the door, like, okay, yeah, got it. But you didn't just work on a submarine. You didn't just cook food. You didn't just any of that. And I know that removing that qualifier from my own vocabulary has improved my state of mind, because I did have leadership that was incredibly toxic on numerous occasions. On Facetech submarines, we have a ladder that goes through all three levels. And it's nicknamed the suicide ladder because you're going to get hurt if you fall down. Like, it just is. There were numerous times where I had a chief tell me that I should just go hang myself so they can get a useful body on board. And so this happened often enough in the 18 months that I was operational that I started to kind of internalize that, because you are institutionalized. I think it was Alfredo that said that we are institutionalized in the military. And this is not just a me thing. I've heard it from every branch of service that I have friends in. And I think the only one I don't have is a guardian yet. But all of my friends have talked about how they've had an LPO or an E7 through E9 or a middle of the road officer, so 03 to 06, just be so outlandishly brazen and rude that you actually call into question your worth. For me, again, removing that qualifier just changed my state of mind, because so much of what I did was, oh yeah, I'm just a chemist. I'm just in charge of radiation health. Oh, well, guess what? I am doing this thing, but it's program management because I oversee a continued program that is reported to Congress or is reported to the 2-star or 3-star admiral in charge of the Pacific Fleet. Those are things that when I started learning how to qualify and put on a resume, I never realized that I spent 4 years in Puget Sound Naval Shipyard standing up projects while still maintaining all of my programs. My skill bridge is as a project manager because I have legitimate cost, scope, defining stakeholders, interacting with individuals of all level in the shipyard, both civilian and military. I have that. I can do that. Once I removed that just from it, it truly changed my life. And my wife would agree. She will never listen to this episode, but she would 100% agree that when I started taking the just out of it and getting rid of it as that, like you said, when you write the skills list, don't come at it with that negative aspect of, oh, this is going to suck. Well, that's how I defined my life for numerous years. But in transition, when I realized I was getting out and I knew that I was going to move forward, I had to figure out a way to make myself seem worthy. And by trying to put down my worth on paper for a resume, it really helped me kind of dial in what I am good at, what I enjoy. Yeah. I never realized that I liked people because I'm an extroverted introvert. I can talk to anybody about anything. But for me to recharge, I need to be in the wilderness by myself. Nothing else. No music, no phone, no nothing. I got to be by, it's just me. That's changed now that I have kids. But like, I love going on hikes with them. And it's just the same thing. It took me figuring out how to write my translatable skills on a resume for me to regain that worth. Because I had nothing to do, like my wife is incredibly supportive, but there was nothing that she could say or do that would make me see what I could do. And I've got some friends who there's nothing that I can do to show them how worthwhile they are. So by helping them see those skills and how they translate to the civilian world, and then showing them those jobs, like, hey, I know you can do all of these desired qualifications and you meet 90% of the required qualifications, and it's something you would be interested in, dude, this position is for you. Like, why aren't you applying? Well, I'm just a, no. Now we remove that. That's gone. Why aren't you applying? And that I've found in my own interactions, and I can't do that on a broad scale, but I try to do it with everybody that comes through my office. I mean, that's, I don't know, probably close to 200 sailors in the last month and a half, getting the word out, trying to do little things here and there, and just sharing the fact that my career has been a fight. Everything I've dealt with has just prepared me to get out and try to make sure that I'm lifting other people up that are coming behind me, because I know what I dealt with. So I know that they're going to deal with something similar. So why would I keep all this inside let it eat away at me and then potentially have me end up as a statistic. Whereas I could share about it, I could become comfortable, and it removes that isolation, that like veil of isolation where you're like, oh, I'm the only one going through this. There were people that were ahead of you, and there are people that are coming behind you, so that you're not the only one going through that. Someone else has dealt with something similar. And I think removing that veil of isolation has been incredibly helpful, not only in my daily life as a career counselor, but also for myself.
I would just say this, that, you know, if there are people that are living in your head that are taking up real estate, that are influencing your thoughts, I need you to ask yourself, like, would I invite this person over to have coffee and sit at my table and have a conversation with me? And if the answer is no, I don't want that person to come over. I don't want that person to be in my house, to share my table, to have a conversation on a Saturday morning. Don't let them in your head the rest of the time. Like, they don't deserve to be there. If they don't have your best interests at heart, they don't deserve to have a voice in your brain. And so I know it's easier said than done, but we've got to get that voice out of there. Well, your questions were very insightful and they're very thought-provoking, Tyler. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and asking me your questions to really just start a conversation about some real issues that plague people that are going through the transition process. So I appreciate you being candid and sharing kind of what you've gone through and are still going through, and giving me those questions to really talk about some of my input as well.
And I appreciate being on here. I know that the podcast has helped me so far in my transition, and it helps me in my daily role as a career counselor. So hopefully somebody can learn from me and understand that they're not alone in the transition. There are plenty of resources out there to reach out. And I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. I talk primarily about nukes, but I have a lot of experience with a lot of different branches. So if anybody wants to reach out and have questions, I'm willing to talk to anybody about anything.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Our goal is to get in the ear of as many active duty service members as possible. So please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and join us on our LinkedIn and Facebook communities to tell us what lesson you learned today.